you will begin after I speak. And maybe I should just make these preliminary remarks, particularly the issue of fraud and corruption, as well as the issue raised by the Honourable Plate about the attitude of officials, because I think this is where the buck stops. Part of our campaign has been to ensure that people know who they are dealing with. So in other words, when you go to our offices, people are supposed to be wearing their name tag. Because very often, what we did to deal with this issue of officials who have bad attitudes is we have put in every office these very people that you see around the table here, their faces and their cell phone numbers on posters in each of our offices. So that if somebody has a bad experience when they arrive at some small office somewhere far away, they can pick up a cell phone, they can dial the DG himself, and the DG will answer his phone. And the DG will hear firsthand while the person is at the office as to which official is it who is treating me badly. So it is important that we empower our people as MPs as well to explain to them that if they were to go to an office and have a very bad experience with whichever official of Home Affairs, firstly, they are expected to wear a name tag so they can't hide. And if they do not wear their name tag, that itself can be the basis of dismissal, because we have insisted that all of our officials wear those name tags. If they do not have that name tag, the client is entitled to call the manager and ask who is this person, so that a report can be given. The issue of Lusikisiki, I would very much like it if our MPs, next time somebody comes to you and complains about bad service and bad attitudes from our officials, that you actually take the person's name and contact details for us and go so far as to ask that individual to write out a statement of complaint with their name and contact number and submit it to us. And in that complaint, put the name of the official so that we know exactly. You see, we have to also work on the basis of our constitution and the laws. We can't just fire people because somebody says so. We have to have something in writing to be able to enable us to act. And we do want to weed out those officials. We want to fire them because they don't understand that they are there because of the people they are expected to serve. They have a job, they feed their families because of the people of South Africa. Not the other way around. The people of South Africa must not be beholden to them to do what we pay them to do. So we want to reassure members that when it comes to this issue of the attitudes, we take personal responsibility as the Minister and Deputy Minister. The Minister has, in his first address to Parliament as Minister of Home Affairs, very strongly emphasized this issue. The second issue is fraud and corruption. Now this is a little more complicated. You know, as a security department, I remember when I first came to Parliament in 1996, I used to sit in the Justice Committee. And we had a minister at that time who was the late Comrade Dalla. And I remember one of the study groups he was briefing us about, because we were new, you know, we were not even sure how Parliament worked in those days. we didn't understand government, what does government actually do, what does the department actually do and stuff. So he was giving us a kind of a lecture, and he was saying, you know, security departments throughout the world are the first target of organized crime. They don't go and they target banks or hijacking of cars or drugs or whatever. They go and they target security departments first and foremost. And what bigger target would you have than Home Affairs? So when you think about Home Affairs as a security department and you understand that syndicates can't operate, particularly your big syndicates that come from outside of South Africa, they can't operate without documents, you realize that actually it is a big target of these syndicates. Secondly, the production of documents. You know, South Africa, we don't realize and we don't think holistically, and the NCOP, I keep on saying, is the one place where you can start putting departments together and understanding how the two work together in one committee. So we often don't quite understand that South Africa is one of the few countries in sub-Saharan Africa that has a very liberal constitution, that has a social safety net. In other words, you can get free healthcare, free education, and you can get grants. What that does is it makes our country a very attractive place to come and live, to come and stay. In addition to which, it is, as much as we have an economic downturn, we are not as bad off as many, many countries in this world, where young people seek opportunities, where they can actually, through sheer hard work, just improve their life and their standard of living. So we present those opportunities to young people. And so for that reason, our country becomes a very attractive place. And without the appropriate documents, you can't do many things in a modern society such as ours. So the ID becomes a very, very important commodity for people. And what happens then is that given these two aspects, the first is that as a security department, we get targeted naturally. And secondly, this pull factor into South Africa. You then have a very potent brew where fraud and corruption is very, very rife. So what have we done over the years? Well, clearly you've heard some of the programs that DG was talking about, and you'll see in the presentation when you go slowly through it, you'll see some of the workshops and the interventions we've made. But that's not all. We've also had to try and find processes where we limit the opportunity for corruption. And the smart ID is one of those. Previously, when we printed this barcoded ID, it would have about 30-odd steps, 30 people in the back room would handle the document and therefore would potentially have the ability to be corrupt and forge the document. Yeah? With the smart ID card, there is no, it's a seamless process. From the time that that button is pressed when you go and put your biometric and you approve all of those details that they show you on screen, and you say, no, I'm happy, those are my details, and we can proceed with this application, then the official has to put their fingerprint more than once, you would have noticed when you did your application, so that we know who it is that is processing that transaction on an ongoing basis in that transaction. So somebody can't come to us and say, no, I put my biometric there, but I had to run to the loo, and then somebody else came in and mixed up this application, and that's why it's a fraudulent. No. We have them constantly doing that in the process, right up to the end of the process. And once the enter button is pressed, that thing goes straight to GPW, it's electronically printed with those machines, and nobody touches it. The machine even puts the card in an envelope ready for dispatch. So the opportunities are therefore limited in that entire system. In the immigration system, we've had another difficulty, and this was where our front offices were adjudicating visa applications. Now that's where another potent brew, because remember you're now dealing with foreign nationals who wish permission to stay in South Africa and so on and so on. That's what immigration is all about. So there what we've done is we are, we've taken away the front office's right firstly to adjudicate those applications, and we made them mere post boxes, and we centralized adjudication at head office. Now what happens is that nobody can bribe any person in the front office to ensure the success of their application. The second step we did, and now what we then found, of course, when we did that, was that applications that people put into our front offices started going missing very conveniently. Why? Because people started getting used to the second and third check every month, and they therefore had to force us to return the adjudication to the front office. Well, we did not buckle under the pressure. We had huge backlogs. We had huge amounts of complaints over the last 2 years. And instead, what we did was we took away even that function from our front offices. They no longer even receive visa applications. We now have VFS, which then does that process for us, and we still adjudicate at head office. You would have seen, again, there was a lot of complaints about that. And a lot of that is instigated, we believe, by people who are indeed benefiting from corrupt practices. At the moment, we have a very efficient system where we can track and trace those applications digitally, and we don't have any more. I haven't received in the last, since we appointed VFS, I haven't received a single complaint where I've had to pick up the phone and call any of the officials, particularly Yusuf Simon, to say, this client has said they applied 2 years ago and we can't find their application at head office, and they applied in your office, they have a receipt. Where is this application? You know, that was the discourse that we used to have. It no longer happens anymore. So part of our processes are, of course, trying to get our, through our HR as well, trying to ensure that our people are knowledgeable, they understand the risk that they are in, the high risk job and so on, and trying to prevent it. But the second is to introduce modern processes where we can thwart the opportunity for fraudulent practices. So those are some of the initiatives, and as the modernization process rolls out, you will have more and more of those digital systems where biometrics of our officials are kept and the transaction records are kept with those biometrics, so that the opportunities for fraud and corruption are limited in home affairs. So that's really our future outlook, and that in a broad stroke is some of the plans that we've had and that we have already implemented in regards to prevention of fraud and corruption. Which is not to say that it doesn't exist as yet, because as you've heard with the DG's presentation, there are still some offices and some processes that are still manual, and we need to convert those into automated processes. Thank you very much. I'll leave it the rest up to the DG and the team.
Well, thank you. So I want to start with our responses by saying, I think there's a saying that before you embark on any transformation process, you need to understand what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses. I think as a department, we had weaknesses on all sides. Our delivery of products and services, and as well as finances, as you indicated, Chair. So that's why we felt that the best way to deal with this thing is always just to be honest about what you have. Not hide anything, not blame anybody, but we look at the processes which we have. Then we'll be able to have the ability to change. So, Chair, it's what we are committing to say. We know now how far we've moved on our side of service delivery. The same concepts which we have on that side, we need to change them now and put on our side of finances. We think we'll be able to do it. As you can see that these are the processes we said we will do. So, Chair, the answer which we have on that side is just to simply say, this is what we want to look at it, we will deliver, and we welcome that the committee says, if we need something, we must come. Hence, Chair, I think the starting point for us was to meet with the AG. That workshop has opened eyes to the management, not to one person. We called that meeting with the chief directors up, together with the whole team of Auditor General, so that we can be sure what is their expectations, what are our challenges, how can we meet each one halfway. So we've got a program with them which we are working on it. So all those issues will be able to address them. But I think for us, those who are coming to the committee at times to come and present our performance report, we will also include that part to say how far we've moved, what have we done, and keep the committee informed. Well, coming now to the specific issues now to say, yes, I think DM has addressed this issue of fraud in Home Affairs. Really, we are a target, but the issue is they want to say, are we visible in dealing with this? We are arresting people. It helps. It does happen in a way people know that, hey, somebody is seeing me wherever, though I do not know. It helps us to really, really deal with this issue. So that's why now even in that performance management tool of the presidency, even in the department, as I say, we bring these things forward. Now people are dedicated to look at it. We are managing it. What are we implementing? What an improvement plan which we have put in place to address those issues. So we've got now the fraud prevention plan. It has been approved. It's a document which we have. So we will, as we will come back and submit to the committee. As we said that this issue of documents really is for us now just to, there's no thing we can say, I don't have a system, I'll be paperless and all this. With the situation we are in, as the chair was saying, if another department can do it, why can you not do it? So that's what we'll be concentrating to. Yes, the issue of the late registration of birth is something which we really as well say we're targeting it. In fact, now in the KZN, the minister signed now an agreement with the municipality, Tekwini, to say what can they do, because remember there are CDWs as well. So now we can get all those structures involved and assist us to communicate this and see what we can do. That's why we're seeing the results. But one of the things we're saying now with the Department of Health, as Chair is suggesting, to say, if now we can have a way of linking the system of health as they are registering beds, and say this hospital had 20 beds, but out of that, we only registered 50. Where is the 5? That's what we want to do. Because once we get those numbers, because at the moment, yes, we're using the stats as South Africa's number, but want to go and use the one of the hospitals and be sure what we can. So it's really something which we really want to push this registration of birth, as DM is indicating that if you've got late registration of birth, you're going to sit with all sorts of problems. People coming when they are 25, they just come now and say, I'm a South African. And then a person born somewhere said, but this person never been in that area. Well, the issue of elderly and disabled, yes, we are looking at a mobile solution. As we said, for Home Affairs, yes, we can have physical offices, but if you don't have a mobile process, you won't be able to cover. So even with the smart card, yes, the mobile offices which we have now is only of the old process, like if you need an unabridged certificate, that one we can do. But we're looking at getting an office which can have now the new system and be able now to visit those areas. In fact, yesterday with our strategic plan as a department, which will still be taking to our deputy minister and the minister to say, Home Affairs must start a strategy of saying, how do we move people out of our offices? That's what the banks did. But there's still people going there, those who cannot afford those things which move them outside of our offices. we can sit and say, yes, people must have computers. But I'm not talking about all, but what about the number which have the computers? Those ones should not come to our offices. They must be able to apply online at their homes or offices. They must be able to pay to the bank without coming to our office. Let us come for a fingerprint and a photo and leave. So it's something which we are looking, but we'll be bringing that now to our minister and deputy minister to say, in the 20 years to come, we need to start now to think about the strategy of saying, how do we take people outside our offices but still getting the services? So that now we can be able to address this. Well, this issue of the distance, yes, we are looking at, if we in Soweto, that Tucson Center, which is in Soweto, the one which we said we have done it now as a dedicated office for a smart card and a passport. That is the concept. There's Department of Social Development, we're together there, but now we're using it. So we've got a process where Tucson Centers are under the Department of Public Service and Administration. So we've started with that one. So now we need now, even on KZN, we are working on, so we need to expand and look at all those areas and see what we can do rather than them be white elephants. So it's something which we'll look at it, we will add on our process. And it's a fact that if people, which you know, is unfortunate now, we were saying, hey, with this smart card has got a benefit on the other side, that nice security and all that, but it's bringing a little bit old memories of chews now in our offices. But as the chair said, when we go around, we just feel not happy with that, but we understand. But there are processes which we're looking at. What can we do to work with the banks? I'm sure Minister and Deputy Minister will announce something on those stakeholder arrangements which we are doing to see that we can work with other people and then they can help us. So that we can cover, we're estimating about 38 million people who've got a green ID book. And every year you've got 10 million. That's why now the strategy was, let's start with the 16-year-olds and as well as the elders, just for our respect to the elders. But now there's this group which is in between 16 and the 59. In total, we're estimating about 38 million people who are currently in possession of the Green Book. So we need to have a strategy to push that thing quickly and do it. And if we can done that, then we'll have things which will be better for us. You know, this matter of collection of IDs, we still don't understand why people come and apply. Because remember, the collection, and we did the analysis, is not the young ones. Those ones who are getting the IDs for first time, they collect. But you know, these uncollected IDs are the reissues. Were at the time where reissues were more than your first IDs. At that time, the reissue was 20 rand. You'll recall at the time when we increased that fee from 20 rand to 140. It never deterred anybody. Those IDs which are sitting in those offices, people have paid 140 rand. As I said, we still don't understand. Then we were saying maybe other issues is that maybe people, it's not that they've lost the ID completely. Because that's why we even tried to delink. Remember before, if you lost your ID, you go to Home Affairs, you get your temporary ID on the spot. But it was linked. You have to apply for an ID at the same time. Then said, let's delink this. Probably a person has misplaced the ID. Apply for this one. By the time he's waiting, he gets his or her own ID. Then doesn't go and collect that one. Then let's delink so that I can get my temporary, but I must not apply automatically the other IDs. But it's still the case. Then the other analysis we found is that people, which is another campaign in social development, was also pushing that people take their IDs, go and give it to Machonisa, and then whilst he's waiting for that, he goes and apply for another ID, and then he pays his or her debt with the Machonisa, does not come and collect now that ID. So there are still those. So it's something which we are really trying to analyze why it is happening like that. But the 140 never assisted us on anything. People still pay the 140 and not collect. Then another strategy which we tried, I remember in some of these elections where we were even saying we're not going to have, so that people can go and apply for their IDs now, and said if there's going to be election, we don't want to have an ID campaign. Because if we send that message, we're saying now to people, no seat, because we know if there's going to be elections, then there's something that's going to be done. So those are the things which we are trying to push. But yet the mayor tagline is the one which we are saying, we really want that communities must assist us. Let's work with everyone who can assist us to push this thing. But except as we said, maybe we need to have messages which we are trying to continue, say, collect your ID. We say now we won't want to go to that to say now people, when they walk, they must have their ID so they can say like a driver's license. For the driver's license, I can't drive the car without a driver's license, but I can't say now to people, go back and say, hey, where is your ID? And if you don't have it, I start and say, no, you can't go. But those are the things which we need to say. What other ways we can do which are democratic but trying to do it? Musikisiki will look at that matter as DMS as that ties to it. Well, we've got a process, as you can see now, on the new thing to say now, what must we do to manage our officials on all what they are responsible for? So it's something which we have done now. We've got monthly checklist which we have developed, and so that we can make sure about who hasn't done what, so that we can be able to take disciplinary processes for people who did not do what they expected of. However, it does not mean we are stopping. If there's someone in these processes, we deal with those people even now. Chair, I think we, as we said, we really accept. I will wait for this meeting with the HIP about it. But I know that even the minister has met with the Minister of Public Works. There is a processes which they have. So it will still goes, that's what we need, that if now we can really push these things from one angle, it will help us. And yes, the Department of Health, in fact, even with the NHI, which is coming, they've approached us as a department to see what can we do together. But really, health is a major partner for us. If you remember, deaths, I saw at one time there was a discourse from the state state South Africa in terms of the deaths, because now we get information from Department of Health, people, they go and come and register their death, but when state starts raising, then the numbers were not correct. So I'm saying Department of Health is a key stakeholder for us. So that is what we will really want to push, so that we can work together on that. Yeah, I think the LRB, as a chair, you said, we will work with the IEC, but as DM is saying now that, no, yeah, we want to do this thing step by step. As well as saying, even now, we have not even implemented the first part of saying you won't register. That's why we're going to go for 2015 first. Then after 2015, we're going to put some penalty first. Again, if the strike is not changing, and then it goes to this step, it goes to that step. So it's a step up a process. So we don't go first point to the one of the court. Well, what do you mean about what is a life capture passport? Life capture means, as I'm saying, that the passport, remember the cases which we had of Samantha with Wade and all that, is this passport where people go and take a photo, even sit under the tree. And then they bring it, and then there's a form, we attach it, it goes, and then this thing gets mixed up. A life capture means you will have to come to the office, then you go and sit in front of the computer, we take the photo, is not the one under the tree. But what is the issue now is that currently we've got 405 offices throughout the country. But the capability now of the life capture will be in 140 offices. So now we need to take a conscious decision to say, if the towns, which again have got this issue of people traveling, but we'll be looking in the population across the country, where do we get a lot of passports? in the region A, we don't get much on this and that, so how can we balance it? And so if you have covered so much geographical area, then you can stop this. Because if you continue with it, it gives more and more. I mean, cases which we have of people who are in the country now, they're in the courts. They were coming from this area, they are using South African, and we don't want that. So that's what the child life capture means. And we will take that matter of the permanent residence, as DM says, but for now with the VFS, at least we're not getting that issue of documents lost. But if maybe this person has applied in the old, but if I can get that, we'll be able to look at and deal with it. So, Chair, I think we can close and then give the colleagues if there's something which I left out. But I think the big commitment which we are giving is the one to say we will concentrate on this matter of finances. We will be briefing the committee on our quarterly reports which will be coming with to make sure that we address those matters.
Thanks, Director General. It was just on the issue of uncollected IDs, as indicated. The suggestion for the SMS is already there, Honorable Chair. There are three SMSs sent to clients. It's when the office first arrives, it's a first reminder, and then it's a third SMS before the ID is sent back to head office, because after 6 months we don't keep them there. But there are SMS methods that are used, but also stakeholder forums that were established are given the list of the uncollected, not the passport, not the IDs themselves, the lists, because the third parties are not allowed to collect on behalf of people. And then they will go and distribute and engage. But we're looking at how effective those action plans are. The partnerships with municipalities, the Director General has spoken to that. And then on the issue of access, I think the challenge with some of the Tusong centers that were opened was the time when there was a rush on the side of DPSA without co-planning with other departments. Now you find that then the resourcing strategy is not there, and people open a lot, and some of them are closer to your office. How do you then play a role there? So we met with them to try and manage the planning so that it's integrated, and when you open where we know it could be. And that is why some of them currently they have those challenges where they opened them, but in fact you find that other departments are not ready. But it's something that we have really tried to address with them so that there is co-planning in the rollout strategy of the Tusong centers. And then on Deputy Minister mentioned the issue of the staff attitude. We can also confirm that over and above the name tag, that's what we call, because Deputy Minister then and the DM and the Minister, they also discovered that they will take these name tags and put them here because they are small. So introduce what we call the name plates, like a number plate of a car, which is much bigger, so that they place it there with their photos, so that they do not disown who was on that counter. You can match the nameplate, it's bigger, particularly for people who are partially blind or whatever, who are sighted. So those are some of the mechanisms that have been made so that people are held accountable in terms of that, and the citizens can report based on the name of who did what. And then finally, the issue of the strategy, as DG said, and it's got very clear three tiers: prevention, detection, and prosecution. And that strategy, and it was approved because then it addresses those. And I think maybe there are things we do not report, but you will find that the way cases were even DG and DDG is to go and testify against such officials, because that is the only way the message could be sent, that from the top there is that particular serious fight against corruption and fraud. Thank you very much, DJ.
Just all of this, should you recall, Chair, the Parliament approved when we had a problem that when we take these cases to the courts, people are getting 2 months or whatever. In the amended act, you are found, you were in the involved in the marriages of convenience, you were in the process of stealing the IDs. Those, I think, have been increased for about 15 years. So we're saying now to the team yesterday that after you are involved in the issue of those ID stealing, we do things. Two things. One is the case within the department. The second one, we go to police and open a case. Then we're saying now we will want now to get what, how many cases have we reported after the amendment, and say these are the 3 cases which were taken through the court. Has given this sentence. It was one of the difficult issues when we're bringing those amendments to say, hey, is it right to say that person can go up to 15 years? And then we said, no, an identity document, as DM was saying, that people need to understand, what do you mean by having this document called an identity? It's not that I can send it to anybody.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The question also about accountability, DG. I must say, as a manager in Home Affairs, a senior manager, we all had to sign addendums to our performance agreements, Chairperson, which link directly to the audit matters. I have a provincial audit plan. My manager signs performance agreements, addendums. So we are really being held accountable in that regard. If there's malicious compliance, there will be accountability.
No.
Chair and Honourable Members, I think we must just talk to the filing situation and link it to the kind of structural stress the department's been under for 20 years, because the department was founded out of 11 departments, apartheid departments. Then its mandate was to go out and make sure we know all our citizens are, give legitimacy to the election. We've been expanding. And the budget has increased slower than any other department. I think, DG, you went to some meeting where it was like 2 to 3%, and education hours were getting 8% increases average over the 20 years. So now we're modernizing, still within the same envelope, $4.5 billion. If you take out the money for the IEC, it's less than $5 billion. We have a huge footprint. So when you go to permitting, which was the culprit when it came to finding files for business firms. We are moving digital. The auditors can even ask for a file from 2 years before. And they'll find a horrible situation because the people are chasing numbers, they're busy modernizing, and the space we have to file is not enough. So they kind of go soft, or rather, they kind of just put stuff in that room. But even then, we're going to put pressure on managers, as Mr. Simons has said, and said, we don't care, you get in that room weekends, you do some kind of filing, we don't want you to tell auditors we can't find the file. But I'm just giving you a sense of the conditions, that it's a structural stress and it's a financial stress to both, improve the car as you're driving and then find that book somewhere under the seat. I'm not sure if my analogy is correct, but it's if you visit us and see a pile of files somewhere that's a bit untidy, then at least you know the background. Thanks.
Okay.
Well,
thanks. No, I haven't said anything about DDGHR, and she joined us late, and we failed to introduce her, but Avril Williamson. And we're hoping that you would also hear her voice, even if it's just to say she's fine.
No, not only that, I had a question on the vacancy rate. I had a question on the vacancy rate, and I heard the PD saying that we're still within the norm. I don't want to agree with you, that PD. Because when you identify a position, it's because there's a function to perform. So if you don't feel that vacancy, it means that the function is suffering. Or else, it means that you don't need that position. Means you must decide whether you want to keep those posts vacant and funded based, or you do away with them until when you are sure that you need them. Because most of the time, we think we need positions, but we don't. And they paint a bad picture if they are not filled. But you still have functions and you don't fail them. So as she is saying hi, can you speak to the high vacancy that you have?
Also to clarify whether those vacancies are funded or are they in terms of the organogram? With other departments, there will be a difference.
And if you need
Honorable Chair, good morning. Good morning to the members and the committee. Perhaps to start off with the easy one, all the positions that we have in the department are actually funded. We don't work on unfunded vacancies at all. Okay? And perhaps then just to talk about our vacancy rate. Yes, the norm is 10%. Yes, we are saying that it's 6.6%, and that is our reality. However, I can only respond by after the 31st of this year. What we have done is we've gone and we've reviewed all the vacancies we've had in the organization. We've reprioritized, saying where we believe the capacity would be most required. And of course, the focus and emphasis has been on all our SMS positions, firstly, and secondly, on our front office leadership functions. So right now, we are actually sitting at a vacancy rate of 0.2%, I think it is, as at end of September. So in essence, what I'm just saying to the committee is that it's something that we've also addressed. We have had a historical or a bit of a legacy on our functions and the process that we are following in terms of reprioritizing. And we do understand that we're below the norm, but I think we are far better off than we were at the end of the financial year. Thanks.
No, thank you very much. And on the issue of equity, the BM has spoken, the BD of the BM has spoken to the issue. It's a serious matter. And sometimes they will just generalize and say on the senior management. Senior management has different levels. Starting from level 15, if I'm not mistaken. DG is 15? DG, what level? 15. Yeah. We can't tell him to put a woman, but.
We have two DGs.
Yeah, but all what I'm saying, I would like even at risk management, Brayden, how many do you have under the BG level 15, level 14? Yes. So that when we say senior management, we have so many women, at least we know what we're talking about. Because I'm seeing one woman now, they might be doing other things, I don't know. But it's a concern. It's a concern. And we cannot, we're not saying we don't want money. Do want men, but you must also think about women, competent, of course, competent women. As closing, I just want to say thank you very much, DM and the BG and the team, for coming and accounting for the work that you are doing. Very much important to us. It doesn't matter how you do it, but the mere fact that you've been able to come and account, it means a lot. Not hiding anything. To us as a committee, it means a lot. We, on a lighter note, this life capturing a DJ, the other side of it has created unintended employment, unemployment. Those who were taking those photos, you know, I knew when I went to the office in Africa, there was this guy from a small village who was taking pictures. I was not sure why he was not there. His name is Komit. Komit used to be there every day because he was taking pictures of people outside. But now he's no more there because of this life capturing. That is on a lighter note. somebody has lost a job, we did not focus more on the cost of energy. That's how we call them. Very serious areas that we must, as we focus on finance, that we must focus on. It's not only illegal people. I know from, I'm coming from Pumala, Swaziland and Maputo, Mozambique, foreign, not epic border. This, I don't know, you have a way of calling them. People are, in fact, it's a business now, because there are kumbis who are waiting, they're taking them, not only, usually we think of black people, all races. They go through that area because it's easy to go through there. I know that it's not only you responsible for the border and in Montreal. Defense is coming back again, coming to support. But at the end of the day, all these people who come through those informal areas, they become your responsibility. Our responsibility, of course, through you, because we expect you to manage the managed people that you don't know, who has a bearing also to the municipality. More importantly, the issue of Ebola. There is a pending meeting that we want to have it before we go to the test with the Department of Health. We are going to invite you, because I think you are playing a major role. Maybe you have to invite defense as well to talk about the issue of Ebola. I am hoping that in that meeting we can just sneak in the issue of the relations that you want with Department of Health. Very much important. It's not only Department of Health, education as well. Remember when we're busy with developing the NDP, the then Minister Manuel, he used to narrate a story of Utandi. From the beginning until when she is writing. I think that must be there. We seem to be quiet about it. That means that education, both basic and higher education, are very much critical to have one system. You register them when they are born. We see them getting a grant. We see them going to ECD, going to basic education, higher education, and go to work. I think that dream of the president must be here. Through this department, we can. And they are within our control. She is the chairperson of education and recreation, meaning that basic education and higher education part. We have a social development in this select committee, which is very much important. We have a health part of this select committee. And water and sanitation, maybe later, but these departments that I've just mentioned are very much critical to realize that. And you are the main stakeholder there, because you come at the registration. We must be able to follow a child. When the child gets lost, somebody must pick up that this child. You don't see her or him either at school or wherever. And also when a child, a person or a child dies, we must know through the system. We don't have to go physically there and see that somebody has died. So health, you are right, health and yourself are very much critical to have one interlinking system. So with those, I just want to say thank you very much for your time and for being honest. We are with you. Your problems are our problems. We'll be working with you side by side. Sometimes we'll be hurt, not because we want to hurt you, but just we want to assist you. Thank you very much. Can I declare the meeting closed? Thank you.
Thank you. Informed about the availability of the smart card at the office.
Oh.
And then?
Eventually got this, but I mean...
Oh,
so
that, no,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, so we,
but that one which Eddie said Weinberg and something
and
wrong, and then it was in Cape Town.
So, yeah, so there's an internal issue there.
Okay. Give me a call.
Okay.
If I don't answer, send me SMS kind of.
Okay, okay, well...
Thank you. Okay, good. December, huh?